He hits this one in the air to center field, chasing Martinez back to the warning track at the wall. It's off the wall. And they're saying it cleared the orange line. It's a home run for Juan Soto to break up the no-hit bid. Juan Soto with his 26th home run of the year. And the Mets, with one out of the ninth, dashed the hopes of Gavin Williams. It's now a 4-1 game.
I know that during the course of 162, there are going to be different parts of a team going when others aren't. But how do you avoid, as a pitcher, putting any undue or added pressure on yourself when you know the offense is struggling at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is you don't think about it that way. The offense is going to struggle. The pitching is going to struggle. The defense is going to struggle. And like you said, it's, you know, you're going to go through waves with different parts of the team. But you don't come to the ballpark expecting the offense to struggle. You know, I see the work that these guys put in, and I know how talented they are. I think we all do. And so you don't come thinking that they're not going to get any runs or that a guy's going to take a no-hitter into the ninth. You know, I have full confidence when I walk into the ballpark on my start days that the hitters are ready to go, the guys on defense are ready to go, and, you know, this is a really good group, and we play good baseball, and so that's the thought coming in. The game is going to go the way that the game's going to go, but, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, missing on a couple pitches early, they've got good hitters over there, and they were able to capitalize, and, yeah, I mean, that's on me, and putting us in a hole early didn't help that their guy was on his stuff as good as he could be for 8 2/3. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, we'll take the positives, build off of them, take the negatives, the things we need to work on, and learn from them and move forward.
You know, you've mentioned something similar a lot this year, that they're better, it's going to turn. But now into August, I mean, this has been a pretty consistent season-long thing. When you look at the players that you have in that room, you know, is there anything that you're seeing overall where you say this is one big reason why it's just not consistently happening?
No, I think, I mean, it's hard to kind of just pinpoint one thing, you know, but you look at the game today or the past few days, you know, we go in with a game plan and we haven't been able to make adjustments as they're making adjustments to us as a whole, as a team. Yes, individually, you got to make some adjustments, but as a team, you got to be able to recognize how they are attacking us, and we haven't been able to do that. Today was pretty easy. You saw the curveballs below the zones against the lefties, finishing lefties with fastballs at the top. He threw some two seams against our righties. But once you get that first time through, we got to be able to make those adjustments and recognize what he's trying to do, as you know, to the whole team. And I feel like not only today, but as you know, the past few weeks or so, we haven't been able to do that. And good hitting teams are able to make those adjustments, and they're able to, all right, that's how they're attacking us. We got to do this. We got to flip the script here. And that's where I think is the next step for us, to be able to recognize that.
Why do you think you haven't been able to make those adjustments?
Yeah, those are some of the conversations that we continue to have. I know our coaches are working really hard. They continue to have those discussions with the players. But at the end of the day, you know, we got to go out and do it.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on the Thursday, August the 7th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, talkingmets, no G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to a late week edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Oh, I don't think we have anything much to talk about. as I come to you here on this Thursday morning to talk to you after probably the most frustrating, disappointing, And really a stretch over the last, since we last, I mean, not so much as we last talked, but really since we came on board with the our trade deadline shows a week ago, what a difference a week makes. Stretch of the season of Mets baseball, all the high and excitement of the trade deadline has been washed away. The Mets get swept by the Guardians, nearly get no hit. Actually, over a two-day span, I think they went 10 innings without getting a hit. And it's really important for us to talk today because between social media, I don't listen to talk radio anymore. And truthfully, if you want to really be healthy and balanced about this hobby and not have too much negativity sticking to you, stay off of social media because it's not going to be really a good place right now for you if you're a Mets fan. And, you know, I figured I'd come to you guys. So let's start here. And let me be very blunt with all of you because I like to always do this. Hey, I'll be balanced. I'll give you perspective. Calm down. It's going to be okay. That's not something I could do for you this morning. There's nothing that I could say after what transpired on this past homestand that's going to make you feel better. There's nothing I could say, and I think that you could agree with this one. Just go to MLB.com and look at who the Brewers are throwing at the Mets this week in Milwaukee. There's nothing I could say that's going to make you feel good about this weekend series. By the way, I didn't feel great about this weekend series, whether the Mets won or nearly didn't got no hit yesterday. Going into the whole thing, you know, so let's just keep that in mind. Mets are slumping in the worst way, lost a heart-wrenching game in the first game of the series against Cleveland, lost a heart-wrenching game on Friday night against San Francisco when I was in the ballpark, and they're heading into Milwaukee against the hot team, you know, a team that, you know, has won 9 of the last 10, won 6 in a row. 36-20 at home, has some really good pitchers throwing at them. During a time when the Mets, I don't think it matters who goes against them, have not been able to get much going on, you know, regardless of the pitching opponent. So there's not much I could say to make you feel better about this weekend. And there's a possibility that what we've been witnessing could get a heck of a lot worse before it gets better. And, you know, you don't need, you know, me to kind of tell you all these things. You're already feeling these things, and you're feeling them a lot worse than probably I'm even thinking. Now, what I do want to do is just have you take a step back and understand maybe why these things are going on, and also how the fix is complicated in some ways, but it's a lot more simple than we're making it out to be. And it's different than what we're making it out to be, if that makes sense. So, here's, though, the biggest problem. Since early June, after David Peterson, and I was in the building that day, had that complete game against the Nats, and then the following afternoon, Kodai Senga went down with a hamstring injury. By the sixth inning of that afternoon, everything was great, right? You know, the Mets were rolling. The Mets have played like, you know, one of the worst teams in baseball. They've played like a second-division club. It's a pretty significant sample size. We're going on almost 2 months now. And it's been largely due to inconsistencies up and down the roster. And I think throughout this season, even when they were playing well early on, a part of the roster was doing a large part of the carrying. Early on, it was the bullpen because the offense couldn't score and the starting pitching wasn't going deep. And then, you know, when the offense has gotten going, a little bit, maybe the starting pitching has taken a step back. And largely the offense throughout the season has been probably the biggest culprit because you've never had it connected. When Soto's on, the other stars aren't. The baby Mets never seem to be on for any length of time other than maybe an inning or a day or a couple of days. And, you know, there's really been no solution because you're locked up and down the line unless you want to do something drastic and turn over the roster. You know, you're locked in with big contracts, established players all over the diamond, with the exception of, you know, maybe third base, catcher, not easy to solve. And then they went out and got a component player at the deadline for center field. So it's not like you could go, and if the season ended today, I know Alonso's potentially a free agent. It's not like you just take the, you know, the roster, turn it on upside down on its head, and just redo it over. You can't do that with the contracts you have in play. And by the way, it's not going to be easy to replace, even though you're angry at Nimmo and Soto and Alonso and Lindor. It's not like you just take those guys and just dump them out and throw them in the trash. You know, you could do that maybe with the young players, maybe McNeil, you know, certainly center field. But it's not like all of a sudden you're just going to go out and there are all these better alternatives in front of you. So you're stuck with what you got in front of you, and you're probably stuck with what you got in front of you for a couple of years. Let's face it. That's not the conversation for today. Now, what I don't like, and this is what generally bothers me about the fans, and maybe it's a small sample size on X or social media or Facebook or people that have time to call into talk radio. There's always the default nonsense that they go to. Oh, this team has no heart. Oh, they're not trying. Why are they smiling in the dugout? Like, heart and grit, these are things that, you know, they're nice to talk about. A lot of that is established in an area where you and I never look at. That's in the weight room. That's in the off season. That's in the prep. You have no idea what that looks like or whether that's done or being not done, because heart and grit is not finding a way when a pitcher is on to get a hit because you will yourself to get a hit. You know, there's some mental, you know, manifestation and things you could talk about, and certainly that's part of it. But, you know, nobody went to the ballpark, I believe, on that club yesterday looking at their watch, expecting to leave. Because if they are, then that's something that the front office and the manager has to address by putting people on the bench. Nobody wanted to get no hit. Nobody sat there and, you know, thought it was acceptable. You know, I even see people don't like when players laugh or smile or, you know, try to have fun while they're in a slump. I mean, it bothers me sometimes, too. I'm the kind of guy that when things aren't going well, I think it's important not to, for myself more than the outer world, to not, you know, make myself enjoy things. Well, maybe I'm not right on that, you know. And none of that is why they lost. You know, truthfully, the Mets are slumping, and you heard pretty much from both David Peterson and Carlos Mendoza the aspects of baseball that we have to remember. One, players go into every day preparing and expecting to be successful. And they don't get too high, and they don't get too low, and it's always a snapshot in time, and it's like you have to turn on and wash it away and move the page. When they start the game on Friday in Milwaukee, they're not thinking about the near no-hitter. They're not thinking about a lost opportunity on Monday night. It's over. And if they are, then that's a problem for the player, and that player is not going to be successful. And if multiple players in the team are looking backwards, not forwards in baseball, the whole team's not going to be successful. And I don't think that that's the case. Now, the thing that's perplexing, and Mendoza threw it out there, was the making adjustments that aren't happening. And that's a more perplexing thing, because he's not singling out a hitter. He's talking about the team, and that's fair. You have up and down the lineup, and to a certain degree, Lindor has talked about it, saying, I got to be better. I got to, you know, take better at bats. I got to be better, whatever. When you have guys like Lindor and Nimmo and Soto and Marte and McNeil, I mean, you know, guys up and down the lineup that have been in the league, Mullins, that have been in the league forever. The whole approach, adjustment, understanding how pitchers are pitching to you and the yin and the yang that is professional baseball, they've been through that a lot. I mean, if you think for a minute, Starling Marte, who's been in the league now since 2012, 13 years, hasn't seen a pretty much at all, has been in all-star games, has been an elite player, has gotten big contracts, that you know, this is something he needs to be taught. You know, come on. That's not the way it goes. Why collectively that's happening? Maybe it's happening to certain players and he's calling them out without calling them out. We don't know. Managers today are not like the old school, the Parcells, the Rileys, you know, Davey Johnson, guys that we've grown up watching, up, you know, Mike Keenan. I'll go and name, you know, great coaches and managers that New York fans know. They're not going to use the media and direct themselves. And even if they do, even a guy like Riley, who I love, you guys know that, when he sent the message to the media, it wasn't necessarily at one person, but it was about the team, and then it was about hopefully that person picking up the breadcrumb a little bit. The fact that this team, and Mendoza outlined it really well, is not adjusting is perplexing and troubling. And I've said, as far as the runners in scoring position situation, I personally, as a novice, think, and I saw some really wild graph come up to me on X with, I gotta tell you, I don't understand. Sometimes, you know, very smart fans who did very well on their different levels of mathematics they took in college and high school and maybe beyond and postgraduate work, they're great. I give them tons of credit. But when I'm looking at something with angles and distance between feet and depth in box and all this stuff, which I know is just numbers to say, hey, I think the guy, from what I saw in the thread, was saying, hey, they're too deep in the box and they're trying to go the other way versus pull the ball. See, I, with my eye tests, see something different. I think ultimately one of the things that has hurt this club, and maybe you saw it even with the Mullins ground ball with that was a diving play that, you know, the Mets should have won on Monday with a couple of runs that would have tapped off that eighth inning, if not for a diving play. I think they try to pull the ball too much at runners in scoring position. If you remember, I talked about it on Sunday. I thought the way that they moved the line on Saturday when they scored 12 runs and went the other way with two outs and drove in runs is something that's probably been missing with runners in scoring position all year. And also, we have felt, we have talked about this when they've struggled in the past, particularly in 2021, when a lot of what we're seeing now is going on when they fired Chili Davis as the hitting coach. And we'll get to the hitting coach before it's out. I think it was more about launch angle and hitting the ball hard, not just trying to meet the ball where it's at. And maybe that's what Mendoza's talking about. I mean, he didn't get too in the weeds with it. So that, to me, out of all the things that came out of yesterday, out of all the ranting and raving, and nobody's really talking about it, I think John Harper may have mentioned it on X a little bit, why they're not making the adjustments, what those adjustments are, you know, need to be in situations, that to me is the most disturbing thing. Because it's not like, look, I can understand if you're talking about Alvarez, you're talking about Mauricio, you're talking about Beatty, you're talking about Vientos, and I'm sure he's talking about them, if not all of them, a couple of them in that statement. But the rest, that's different. Now, you have to also look at this stuff that, you know, if you want to get into the talk radio stuff, the grit, the heart, all the stuff that I just like at this point in my life, I'm like, this stuff is not necessarily what you guys think. Look, if this was the 1993 Mets that are throwing firecrackers, collecting paychecks, looking at the, you know, portfolio and just trying to get through the rest of their career with making as much money as they want and then worrying about the off day and when the day they break for the season, that's different. I don't believe that's this club. I've seen clubs like that. I've been a fan long enough, and all of you who listen, who have been fans in the same or longer than I have been, have seen teams that are paycheck teams that just collect their check, clock in, clock out, maybe worry a little bit about their milestones, and they move on. And it's usually a toxic team, and it ain't a team that right now, the situation they're in the muck. And the real question, and we've said it since Sunday, the difference between the Mets making the postseason or not is whether or not the Cincinnati Reds are going to get hot enough to play at a high enough level, or the Mets are going to get, or continue to be bad enough to play at a low enough level to get knocked out and have a real crisis on our hands. We're not there yet. Of course, it's a lot more of a conversation here on August 7th than we want. That's not what this team is. That's the perplexing thing about it, that, you know, why are they there? Now, you want to talk about the heart and the grit and the stuff that you can't put on a spreadsheet? And I've said it over and over and over again. And I remember when I used to talk about the yoke and all that stuff, you guys used to either get really into it or really mad. And a lot of this is falls into the heart and grit. We could say it, you know, but to me, there could be one component that falls into that non-data-driven, non-logical approach. The Mets had a really fun season last year, an unexpected season, a season where you gave up on the team around Memorial Day. You let it go. You let this season go. And as a fan, when you let the season go, a lot of times the anger and the frustration and the stress goes away with it because you're like, hey, I'm just going to sit back and let this season go. And then all of a sudden they got hot And not only did they get hot, they won games dramatically. And they were fun. And they had some characters like Iglesias and Vientos coming up with his storyline. Interesting storylines that dotted it out. And then what's the cherry on top? The Milwaukee game with Pete. Lindor's postseason. The vibes at Citi Field. And in the end, I think sometimes we act as fans like the Mets won a championship. At the end, they went to the NLCS and they had a really good season and a season where they broke through some historical anvils they had on their back and they set themselves up for the future. They just put themselves in a position where the vision of Steve Cohen, they got to a starting position where they could start executing the vision that Steve Cohen had put out 5 years ago. And then, oh, well, they have the offseason where they go and they steal one of the best hitters in baseball from their crosstown rivals, and they do something that never happened, maybe only once in Mets history, if you want to go back to when they signed Bobby Bonilla. They threw the most money out there over anybody. They acted like George Steinbrenner's Yankees in a way that maybe even George, when he was alive, didn't have the opportunity to win a free agent derby. So when you put all that together, the expectations and everything rose so high, I think there was a vibe from the fans that, well, this is now going to be easy going forward. And newsflash, it's only going to get harder. And I think that's part of it. Now, as the team, and they know this, after last year, you could never replicate some of the intangible things that happened last year. Teams have these fun seasons. Like, and I'm not a Yankees fan, but I'm speaking not from somebody that was living and dying with that group, but somebody that was around to watch it enough and live through the media coverage of it. The 90s Yankees, for all the success they had, what they experienced in 1996, the magic of that season with Larritz and the unexpectedness of winning and coming back against the Braves and Joe Torre finally, you know, getting to the postseason and winning it all, and that storyline, that was never replicated with their other titles. After that, it became much more business and having not only a breakthrough, but doing having their own version of organization mastery, which they accomplished. And sure, you know, 98 was fun, but and because of the magic maybe of the amount of wins, but it was very businesslike. And then 99 and 2000 were businesslike, and 2000 was more about surviving. So you never get those, doesn't matter who you are, you never get those vibes again. The Mets are nowhere near where that Yankees team was. They didn't even accomplish what the 96 Yankees accomplished. But they're at a point where they need to have their breakthrough. The 96 Yankees had their innocent climb the year before in 1995. They had their breakthrough in 1996. And the Mets haven't had their breakthrough. Now, a breakthrough for this club is getting to a World Series and winning it all. Nothing else is going to matter unless they rip the damn thing completely apart in the next year. And again, I said in the early part of this show, not that easy. So what happens when you're trying to have a breakthrough? There's a burden of expectation now. And that burden of expectation becomes large. And, you know, Soto comes in with a burden of expectation of a new club, highest paid player in this sport, and now has to live up to that. Because everybody's looking at every at-bat. Everybody's looking at, you know, him living up to that contract. We've talked about that. You've got guys like Lindor and Alonso and Nimmo who have been here a while that now are expected to bring this team to the promised land, the next level. You just can't go out and be yourself. Add in the fact that Pete's playing for that contract that, yes, he wants to get paid, and you and I are not taking up a collection plate if Pete doesn't get a 7-year deal. Still making a lot of money. And if he opts into his contract that he's still got on the table, the $24 million next year, he's still going to be handsomely paid. But some of that is about accomplishment and ego. And look, you're great at a sport that less than 1% of the world is great at because you have that ego. So all those burden of expectations, the crowds, how Mets fans are turning the corner, and the Mets fans want to turn the corner. They want to distance themselves from disappointment. And that and all of that added up puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the club and puts a tremendous amount of, you know, live wire behavior on the fan base where they're ready to pop at any time. And I think all that together could be weighing on this club. And I know everybody's yearning and they keep bringing up JD Martinez and they bring it up in context of the hitting coach and the approach. I think the biggest thing J.D. Martinez may have done when he called the team meeting last year, and again, another thing, team meetings, you know, you could have a great meeting. It's not going to have you hit a ball harder or strike out more people or make a good play or stop the opposition from doing what they're going to do. It just kind of clears the air or maybe even just relaxes you more than anything. I think though J.D. did, he relaxed this team, said, hey, let's just go out and blanket and just play. And to a certain degree, this team probably needs that. Now, do they have, and are they missing maybe some component veterans that could go in there and provide that? In the modern game of baseball, and it's going to get worse, especially if they do what the NBA is implementing with the, how they restrictive they are, the more money you spend, you can't necessarily put a payroll and a roster together that pays what veterans like J.D. Martinez, like Jose Iglesias are worth and the time they need to spend away from their families and dedicate to the sport. You're not just going to do it for, you know, less than at least what you think is acceptable based on your time in the sport. And that what's less than acceptable for your time in the sport is a hell of a lot more money than you and I are seeing. So I'm not, again, asking you to take up a collection plate, but it's the equivalent of some of you. You know, some of you in the audience I know have very good jobs, very skilled people. You know, your executives, pilots, you know, all sorts of things, tradesmen, at the top of your craft. You are not going to work for minimum wage in your craft just because you want to stay in the craft. If you have enough money and you could go home, you're going to say, hey, screw it, I'm done. So that's where these guys are at, like it or not. Now, minimum wage, whatever it is where you are, which is usually about 15, 16 bucks, whatever, versus what minimum wage in baseball is, a lot different. But because of how much money you have to dedicate to the very good players now, not even the Hall of Famers, the very good, the cost of pitching, you are now going to dot rosters with young players that are making the league minimum, that have a lot of potential and upside, and you lose maybe some of that veteran nuance. One of the only criticisms you could possibly make now that they've fixed the bullpen, because I'm not going to criticize Stearns for the rotation. The rotation was much more complicated, and starting pitching is evolving in a bad way where it's not that easy to build a rotation. And some of it's a development and luck. The one criticism is, and they really had no choice because you got to know what you got, is that instead of having Iglesias and J.D. Martinez as veterans on component pieces, you're trying to have a Brett Beatty, a Mark Vientos, a Ronnie Mauricio fill those spots and play competently while they're trying to develop and while they're not only trying to develop, they're trying to be a core star like a McNeil, like an Alonso. Maybe if you get lucky, not quite Soto, but more pointing in that direction. And you're living through their development. And by the way, there's a chance that they're not as good as we thought. And there's not much we could do about that. So, you know, when you start to look at all these things together, these are part of the growing pains of the season. And that's why the season's 162 games. It's a grind. And even though it's getting late and there's a lot of disturbing trends and sample sizes that make us uneasy, and they're staring down the barrel of hell this weekend, you know, it's still a long season. It's still a long season. And everybody acts like the 2024 Mets were this juggernaut after June 1st. They played very well, and let's face it, for even going into this year, for a calendar year, they had the best record in the whole damn sport. They were a couple outs away from going home in Milwaukee. They were three or four outs away from not even making the postseason in Atlanta. The last week of the season, this vibe team that you all, you know, talk about, was reeling. Losing in Milwaukee, needed to win a game in Milwaukee on a Sunday afternoon just to set themselves up to win in a House of Horrors, a doubleheader nonetheless. So let's not act like that. And similar to the last week where if Brazenbaum covers first and the Mets get a little dink on Friday night and a ball squirts past the second baseman on Monday, the Mets have three more wins and they're competing for some of the best records in the National League. And we're not even having this conversation today. We're having similar conversation, maybe components of it, but not the crisis conversation we're having. That's how close the margin of error is at this point. So that's kind of where I think the, maybe on the team side, the burden of expectations, where the breakthrough hasn't happened. And also, you know, because of the financial part of the sport, the disjointedness of how Stearns goes about building a bullpen, the reason he's allowing kids to develop, which might also be important for the future. You got to know what you have. And historical things that you do at a spring training and ways that you put certain types of players in the roster is just not going to happen because of finances, because of the fact that you're trying to develop pieces of your roster for the future. You're trying to win and develop for the future, not something that is that this team has ever done well. And it's a needle that's it's a very hard needle to thread. It really is. And all the solution can be is they just go out on Friday, wipe it away, and play better. I hate to sound like Buck Showalter again, play better. You got Woodruff on Friday, coming back from surgery, pitching the daylights out of the ball. You're going into a tough place to play, a place that the Mets have struggled at times. Play better. By the way, it's a huge. This was going to be a huge test, in my opinion, this weekend. This is the kind of place that, realistically, with about 6 or 7 weeks left in the season, you're going to go into 3 days in October, and you're going to be going into a place like this and have to win 2 games like you did last year, whether it's Chicago, whether it's Milwaukee, San Diego, maybe Philadelphia. You're going to have to do it. So rip off the Band-Aid and practice now and get it done. That's what I can say. Now, to wrap up here, the part that bothers me a lot, and this is a human behavior that is much greater than just sports, and maybe it's generational. Again, everybody likes to criticize me. I get alerts sent to my email. I know what's said of me in Reddit threads. I know what's said about me on social media. And I don't read these things because I'm like, rabbit ears trying to validate things. I'm curious what people think about the show. And I see generationally people talk about this show in a sense where it's an older show. I talk down to the fans. And sometimes I get angry with the fans, and I do, because I'm trying to get you to listen and think of something different and get out of your own heads. Because all the things that you have felt and the mistakes and the thought processes you made, I've made too, and I've learned, I hope, over the years. And the thing that bothers me, and this is a sports thing for sure in every sport, and I think it's probably greater than just the New York sports scene, but it's prevalent in a big-time way in the New York sports scene. But it's also something that, unfortunately, society, in a society standpoint, we've indoctrinated ourselves through how the media talks to us, how we learn growing up. There always has to be a scape person or group for a problem. And if that problem is punished, A, we like that because it makes us feel better in a moment, and B, our problems will be solved going forward. And never is there ever one reason or group or person for a problem, whether it's sports or in society. And if you don't believe that, you're wrong. I'm sorry, you're wrong. And if you've been taught that, get it out of your head, because it's a bad behavior, especially if you're younger and you're, not yet at the level where you've made have some experience in life that, and I haven't experienced everything in life. There's people in this audience that are way older than me and have way more sports and life experience. But if that's a trend that you have, if you could take one thing away from this program, is lose it. It's never one person. And where I'm going with this is, if you believe that the Mets' problems will be solved tomorrow because Eric Chavez and Jeremy Barnes are fired, and all of a sudden what Mendoza said changes, then you either think that this sport is controlled, and I think a lot of people think it's like, because maybe that's the video game generation, that there's like a joystick with a pitching coach, a manager, and a hitting coach. They just, say something to Juan Soto when he walks up, and all of a sudden, oh, boom, boom, yeah, sure. Let me make an adjustment to, the curveball versus, the fastball high in a way. It's not the way it works. Hitting coach, pitching coach, they work on establishing organizational philosophies. It's not necessarily like an NBA team where there's plays or guys have certain roles in a symphony of a group, or an NFL offensive coordinator. Those are different sports. Those are offensive philosophies. Baseball is a team sport that is a bunch of individuals working together to maximize what they can provide with their skill set and their role. They work independently of each other. There's not the same symphony of an NBA chemistry on the court. You could completely put blinders on, never talk to your teammates in theory, do your job and be the best teammate ever, because you go out there and you hit 320 and you drive in runs and you move runners over when you need to, and you strike people out and get out. Now, I'm not saying that that's a way to hang out with your group 180 days of the year, 162 games, 180 days, but you know where I'm talking about. Eric Chavez is a tool, no different than an iPad, no different than a video. His job and anything that's going on organizational philosophy-wise that you don't like starts way at the top. What I said, what I think might be with them, you know, trying to do a hard, you know, just focus on exit velo and hit the ball hard, not situationally hitting the ball, dink and dunk, something that you saw a lot of under Buck in 2022. Different type of players on that roster, the Cannas of the world. That starts way at the top. It's the type of players you bring in. It's what they're taught at the minor league level. Eric Chavez doesn't have that power. If you believe for a minute Eric Chavez has the power to ruin an entire organization, you clearly don't know what coaches are about. Now, is Eric Chavez a different voice in a room, and does Stearns appreciate having a different type of, you know, and if you go and look at X and see some of the older school, and I can't believe, because these are not older school players that I would have looked at older school. I feel like they just were finished playing yesterday. The Doug Minkiewiczes of the world, Zach Cozart, I see pop up on Twitter, Jeff Fry, guys that get looked, you know, talked about old men yelling at the clouds. And sometimes I think the way they position what they're trying to say is too ageist the other way. You know, maybe they, and I don't know enough about Chavez. He doesn't talk to the media. The Mets don't talk about him a lot. He's a tool in their cupboard, in their cupboard. That's not what his power base is. And if they didn't think he was doing the job in the organizational stream and flow, he would already have been gone. Now, do they look at the different voices that are communicating the organization philosophy and maybe change them after the season? Perhaps. And everybody likes to go back to 1999, certain people that I think weren't even alive back then. I was alive and I remember it. Way different sports scene, way different media scene, way different way of looking, less analytical way of looking at things. And Steve Phillips has been on MLB Network Radio and talked about this numerous times. When the coaches were fired in 99, and he fired the hitting coach, the pitching coach, the bullpen coach, it was more about neutering Bobby Valentine. Because he felt Bobby Valentine was getting too big for his britches. And he wanted to let Bobby Valentine know, hey, I'm the boss. That was, and look, he does talk about how he didn't like how certain things were, you know, going. But I think that was more about shaking things up in a situation where his job is on the line too. You know, if the Mets had spent a lot of money and they had a lot of expectations, they just had Piazza and Leiter signed long term, and they were under 500 in June, and they were losing to the Yankees. And they saw the season slipping away. I personally think it's all coincidental. I talked to Mickey Brantley many, many years ago. He had the same frustrations with Ray Ordóñez that Tom Robson probably had. I know for a fact that Tom Robson was on that club, very tight with Bobby Valentine, and there were stars on that club that never used him. Do you honestly believe, and I don't know this, I'm not speaking from someone telling me this, but do you honestly believe Hall of Famers over the years, Tony Gwynn, Mike Piazza, Ichiro Suzuki. Do you really think, other than maybe occasionally going to a pitching, hitting coach and saying, hey, could you tell me what you see? And then implementing whatever they think is the right solution. Other than doing that, do you think that the hitting coach could just go up to them and say, hey, can I talk to you? They can ask that. Look at the Yankees, you know, Gary Denbo. That was Jeter's guy because Jeter felt comfortable going to him. And Jeter made that decision, not the Yankees. So understand how professional hitters, especially those at the top of the sport, guys like Alonso and Soto, they're not employees like you and I that have to listen to somebody. This is not Office Space, baseball version. Again, maybe I'm dating myself with that movie. Now, as far as where you guys take the scapegoat and the punishment, and again, I think this is a younger generation, and maybe I'm contributing to the culture war here. Maybe it's an ex-social media thing. To start this whole thing that this guy's got, and I know he's been on Instagram fighting with fans, and I don't know if that's his family or him. And if he, it's the worst thing in the world. I mean, look at what the 76ers and their GM, I think is the guy's wife, and I'm trying to remember how it went. Brian Colangelo, you know, there was a burner. I think that the guy's wife was using. I can't remember the whole story. Maybe it's a family member. It's the worst thing in this world, especially in professional sports, to create a burner account on social media, Instagram, X, whatever, Facebook, and then defend your husband, your spouse, your father, because you don't like what people are saying. It sucks. If you are in that spot and you're a family member of a coach, a manager, a ball player in any city, to sit here and listen to some of the garbage that goes on throughout the game when people use social media as a verbal toilet bowl just to get their feelings out. It sucks. It's not worth it. If Chavez is doing that on in a big way, yeah, you're right. If I'm Stearns, I call him in the office and say, let's have a conversation. Let's have a conversation. Maybe they have had that. But this whole thing that there's a burner account that's making slurs and fighting with fans, and I know, I saw somebody say, oh, I know because I'm a hacker. I saw that. It's his IP address. In an environment where just a few years ago, the media held on to a story about Jared Porter for years, a story they acted incredulous about that if they were so incredulous about, should have been reported 3 years earlier if the right thing really was about, that was about getting the right thing done. Should have been reported immediately. There's no secrets in this sport. Everybody knew what he was up to or what he did. What do you think, that all of a sudden one day in December after he got the GM job 30 days in that they found out about it? No, he got a big promotion. He had more profile. They wanted to go after him. They wanted to build the Athletic. And, you know, unfortunately, he walked right into it. He did a lot of stupid things, things that you shouldn't do, whether you're a GM or you're an hourly wage worker just trying to make a living. You shouldn't do those things. You're going to tell me in this environment where that happened that nobody in the media has picked up on this burner account, especially with some of the things I saw him supposedly say that are not suitable for work and are not culturally acceptable. You really think the media wouldn't have picked up by this now? They would have loved it. They would have licked their chops because it's not happening. And I'll be the first to say I'm wrong, and I'm the first to say if this guy is spending his time immediately after the game fighting with fans over, you know, his reputation, well, come on. I saw some of the Instagram things. And again, in today's day and age, sometimes I worry about AI and people doing some sort of manipulation with whatever program. But forget about all that. The only reason you want people fired, the only reason you want to boo Soto or have, you know, I saw like National Boo Soto Day. Yeah, that's a good use of your time. A hobby that's supposed to be fun in a world where you have so many stresses and negativity thrown at you every day for real life reasons. That's how you want to spend your weekend. Really? Really? That's productive. I'm not saying be happy, but come on. Stop with the finding the scapegoat. Stop with trying to punish somebody. The Mets put together the team. The Mets put together the team with the president of baseball operation that's widely respected throughout the sport. Somebody that you've been dying to get for years. And guess what? Baseball's tough. The Dodgers started their journey with their equity group well over a decade ago. They won a BS World Series that nobody takes seriously in 2020. And they just, less than a year ago, won their first title. And they had their ups and they had their downs throughout the period. You look at it as an outsider and see nothing but ups because you didn't live it and because you're the Mets fan that was tired of the cash flow issues and the management, poor management coming from ownership. This is baseball. You go back, you throw a dart, you pick any team that won or didn't win or came close in the history of the sport. And if you go into the newspaper archives, every team goes through periods of controversy and strength and weakness. Even the great Yankees teams of the 40s and 50s and 60s, they had their periods. Some more than others. I've seen what I've seen before. The only thing, and I think Carlos Mendoza said it best, and David Peterson said it best, you got to go to the ballpark and you got to wipe it away and figure out how to be better tomorrow. The part that we have no control of that is the most concerning of all this is the adjustments. Why are they not adjusting? Is it the burden of expectations and trying too hard? We've seen Soto jump out of his shoes sometimes, very unlike him in big spots. Is it the way that the organization is communicating information? Are they overloading them with spreadsheets and video and not just having to go out and be themselves? We don't have that answer. I don't think you're going to get that answer. But that's where this is at. So I'm sorry if you came in here expecting me to tell you it's all better. I'm sorry if you came here expecting for me to yell and scream and want everybody's head on a roll. Everybody in this organization, from Stearns and the Cohen all the way down, knows that not making the postseason and not putting out every effort, every execution to be at or better than you were a year ago when you lost to the Dodgers in six. They know that it's going to be viewed as a disappointment. They know they have no scholarship. They know that because of last year, you can never go back, at least not with this group, unless you rebuild. That's not where they're at. They know that. And they know that if they don't make it to the World Series or put a really good showing in the postseason and don't make it because they just flat out got beat by a better team, even then I don't think that there's going to be happiness. They know they're going to get criticized and they're going to have a long, long winter. They know that. They know that. Trust me. Nobody's here just sitting back saying, don't worry. Just keep that in mind. So I don't know if I made you feel better. I don't know if I gave you anything different to think about. But that's what I got for you today. So anyway, what's next? I think an interesting weekend in Milwaukee, a Mets team that needs to start to win on the road. Even the theme this weekend was going to be, hey, they need to start winning on the road and being competitive. Not just win, being competitive on the road, even before the antics of the last week or so. And it'll be very interesting where this team is at come Sunday when we reconvene. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, talkingmets, no G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. And I want to thank the good folks at the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Thursday. Get ready for some interesting baseball this weekend. Till Sunday, take care, everybody.